Welcome to another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. Finally back into our newsroom studio. Finally got Katie back in here after she's been all around the world, and back to Harrisonburg and back to football practice to get her first look at the Dukes this spring. We'll have plenty to talk about as far as, you know, basketball, coaching changes, transfer portal, everything else. But we'll start with some spring football because Katie did get a chance to go take a look at what's going on over at Bridgeforce Stadium. Was dry last time you got out there. It's not dry today. Still waiting to hear on, you know, what that means for the spring sports schedule this week. But football-wise, what did you get a chance to see with your first look since coming back from Italy?
Yeah, it was definitely different than kind of what we had all become to know from JMU football with Cignetti and his staff. I will say, talking to the other media members who obviously were not out of the country and were at practice the last week, it was yesterday's practice still was a little bit different. They had the music going, but yesterday it was a nice 80s playlist. So it was a little calm, like Purple Rain at one point was playing, and I thought the pep band was going to just come out of nowhere and start playing along, but it was a lot of fun. I think some of the things that really stood out to me right away, it was how involved Bob Chesney was with multiple different position groups. I think I watched him for about 5 minutes just standing next to Ryan Hansen, and Ryan Hansen only watching him punt after punt after punt, talking to him, giving him pointers, and just things like that. I don't think we saw it very often with the previous staff. Usually the special teams was kind of off to the side and, you know, in their own little bubble, in their own little world. And so to see a head coach so involved, and I know heading into it, all of us kind of understood that Chesney did pay attention to special teams at his previous stops. It was neat to see him taking time to work with a punter that closely. And then on top of that, not just him, but all of the coaches were insanely involved. Not only were they directing the drills and telling him what to do, when there were times when they had to sprint up and down the field and the coaches were doing it with the players. And so definitely a high energy practice, a lot of fun to watch, and changes are definitely there and they're visible.
Yeah, this is just, you know, thought popping off the top of my head, but it kind of makes me wonder, you know, Cignetti obviously took like a broader view of everything during practice. He kind of just sat back and watched everything. And then I'm sure he was diving into those things that you were just talking about in film, mm-hmm. in meetings, things like that. I wonder if the coach is getting that much more direct with it during practice, if that then frees up time other places where, you know, Cignetti, basically his life was watching film and, you know, not doing much else, which is one way to approach it and obviously worked for him. But when you talk about things like, okay, the staff, these players, they're going to get out in the community more. They're showing up to other sporting events. Like, you know, Chesney's been to basketball games. You know, Cignetti, I think, you know, watches two basketball games a year, like even on TV. You know, I wonder if just a different approach to practice has trickled down into where the rest of their time goes, because it just seems like it's a very different approach to everything.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. Tomorrow, we're recording this on a Wednesday, so tomorrow for Thursday, we do have the ability to talk with players. So I'm really excited to speak with them tomorrow and just kind of see how things have changed from the previous staff to now and what they're seeing as players and how it's different in everyday life and what their meetings are like and how those have changed. Because I think what Cignetti did as a coach obviously worked. I mean, there's a reason he's now at Indiana. He's a good coach. But he was always easy to find at practice. Like, he was always kind of this, like, watchful eye that you could spot pretty easily. He's tall, so he stood out that way too. But he kind of always had his arms crossed and he was watching practice. We were all joking yesterday that it's hard to find Chesney at practice sometimes because of how fast he moves around. And one second he'll be on one side of the field and then you blink and he's over with the defense after that. So it is interesting to see how quickly he moves around, but also how much time he's devoting to different position groups. And I think so far it seems like everybody's been liking it. I was reading some of the articles that were put out while I was away, and it just seems that his coaching style is translating really well to this program.
Yeah, you know, I kind of joked about it another time. they don't do it anymore, but the old school football coach type of thing where like they're actually up in a tower just observing everything is kind of what Cignetti always reminded me of. He was on the field, he was field level, but you know, you see the old things about like Bear Bryant, like just towering over everything and just being like, you know, kind of the God's eye type of vision of the whole program. It is a lot different from everything I've seen and heard with Chesney, just being more vocal, being more around different parts of the field. And like you said, not necessarily taking it all in right then. You know, he probably gets that view from it when he goes back and watches film, but definitely, you know, very interesting to do the comparison contrast to two guys who are both extremely detail oriented, but just approach it in almost opposite ways.
Yeah. And it was also another thing that happened yesterday at practice. There were a lot of high school recruits that were there watching, and before practice, well, practice had started, but before Chesney really even got involved with it, he's walking around to all of these recruits and their parents. He's introducing himself. He's pretty much at that point, he goes up to a guy, he knows what position obviously that he's recruiting them for. And he's like, okay, he's like, you're going to kind of want to watch this group over here for today. Like that's who you're going to potentially be joining. And so just that ability to see him connect right away with players and coaches that aren't even committed to the school yet was interesting to see, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's another difference from Cignetti when he's out there is, you know, he's obviously very involved in recruiting too, and would take the lead on guys when it was somebody they really wanted. But even then, like recruits at practice and stuff, then you would see other staffers, maybe not even like actual assistant coaches, like really handling those people at practice, during practice. I'm sure there's other stuff going on inside the building and things before and after, but practice was practice when the previous staff was here. And, you know, that's definitely a big difference. As far as, you know, the assistant coaches go, anything you were able to observe, you know, first time out just with the various different assistant coaches, I guess particularly, you know, new offensive line coach, that's the most recent change.
I'm not going to lie, it was a little weird not to see Robo out there, but I wouldn't say there was a big difference in the energy from the offensive line. Like, it was very similar drills, obviously, very similar high energy. You know, they're getting involved. They're kind of going at each other time and time again. Like, they're not slowing down. So to kind of see that switch and to see, obviously, losing Robo at the time they did, it was a little unexpected, maybe, throughout the program after the staff had already been put together. But it doesn't seem that there's been a drop-off, and it seems like the players are still tuning in and they're listening. And obviously, for good reason, it's a great staff that Chesney's put together. And just across the board, too, I know I spent a little bit of time watching the defensive line and watching Sam Daniels, who, you know, this is his alma mater. He has a lot of pride in this institution and in this program, and just kind of watching him on the field that, you know, he used to play his games at, I think looked like he was obviously paying attention to his position group, but, you know, he's into it. He's coaching them. He's talking with them. And there's a lot of high energy across the team, both from the players and from the coaches. And it was very, very evident within probably 5 minutes of walking into that stadium yesterday.
Yeah, with Sam Daniels coming back too, it seems like you always kind of want to have, in football in particular, it seems like you always want to have one or two guys at least on staff who have those ties, those deep roots, an alumni or have coached there for a long time or something. So, you know, definitely, I think, big time to bring him back on this new staff. You know, you talk about missing Robo and it being weird to not see him out there. At the same time, I think, you know, bringing Chris Smith, like, that's an unbelievable
hire. That's a great hire.
Like, to get a guy with that resume to come in here and coach offensive line. That was really impressive, you know, bit of hiring from Chesney.
Yeah, and I think reading John's articles, who was covering the football team while I was away, they did have Cole Potts available last week for media, and he's talking about it. He's like, well, I mean, it's like we haven't missed a beat. Like, it's comes in and we're ready to play for this guy. And so it was interesting. I think I spent the most time yesterday watching the offensive line, mainly because of that change being so recent. But at the same time, eventually your eyes would wander too. And I think I'd be remiss to not mention kind of watching the quarterbacks, because there was at one point Alonzo Barnett dropped probably the nicest pass I've seen from a college quarterback at JMU in a long time. And then at the same time, you were watching Dylan Morris throw absolute darts into the end zone too. So it was one of those things to kind of watch this offense so early start to click on all of these different cylinders. I think JMU football fans are in for quite a nice treat, especially when the season starts, but I think even in less than a month when the spring game happens.
Yeah, you mentioned Alonzo Barnett. Definitely be interesting to see where he comes back from, you know, really just kind of having his confidence shot last mm-hmm. year. You know, I think, you know, most people at the time would have liked to have seen Kurt Zignetti stay, would have liked to kind of continue to build off of what they did last year. But if anybody probably needed a change, it might have been him. You know, not to, you know, knock the way anything was handled last year or anything like that, but I just feel like that's a guy who has the talent there, didn't respond particularly well to the early struggles, and, you know, maybe just seeing, you know, more positive vibes and different outlook on things. You know, it definitely be curious to see where he comes back and, you know, his ability to maybe challenge Dylan Morris for some playing time.
Yeah, I think coaching changes always end up being good for overall most players, but especially some of those guys that, yeah, they just need their confidence back a little bit. You know, obviously he's someone that he didn't enter the portal at the end of the season. He remained with the team going through that transition. And I think it will be interesting to see him now with, if he ends up, obviously there is someone ahead of him that has more experience at a college level playing. I think that will end up being hopefully a good lesson for him too. Someone that can provide a lot of leadership who almost went through a pretty similar situation of, you know, he's the starter for a little bit, ends up getting benched and watches this other guy come in and have a lot of success. So I think that's going to be an interesting quarterback pairing between Morris and Barnett. And I think it will be one that will be interesting to watch throughout the rest of the spring and then into kind of the summer camp into fall.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, big plays by those quarterbacks. Anybody else before we, you know, transition into other topics, anybody else that just kind of stood out to you with their play from what you observed being out there?
I'm not going to lie. I mentioned him earlier with Chesney watching him, and I feel like we need to give special teams more of a credit. But Hansen's punts yesterday were consistent, and they were going a good distance. So I think as weird as it is right now to shout out the punter, I think that's obviously one that, you know, controls the field of play sometimes. So I think that one was pretty fun to watch and how far he could send those.
Yeah, and if, you know, JMU with their deep running back room, if they get into a more of a running type of style, run first style, that field position battle and flipping the field and, you know, playing that game might end up being pretty huge. And you've got a multi-time all conference yeah. player at that position. And I think anytime you have that coming back at any position, it's huge. And yeah, good to point it out, because that is probably a position that maybe he's not going to get talked about as much, but could be a pretty key one for JMU, especially as they transition and, you know, early on, maybe things aren't going quite as smoothly on offense and stuff as they, you know, are all getting used to a new system.
Yeah. And I think it is important to note too that we're only at practice for a limited amount of time. So mm-hmm. we see what we can see. There is a lot of stuff that they then turn to practice that we are kindly asked to leave the stadium before that can happen. So hopefully, I'm hoping tomorrow we can maybe see a little bit more of the running backs and positions like that that are going to be kind of those big playmakers when the season comes along.
Yeah. So that's what we know about football so far this spring. It has been a very, very busy spring at JMU for a lot of things. Like I mentioned earlier on, back in the studio for the first time in a long time, I was on the road with the JMU basketball team for a good chunk of March. And what turned out to be the end of the Mark Byington era at JMU. We now have Preston Spradlin in. He kind of made his introduction to, you know, JMU fans, media, everybody else, on vacation with his family this week. That was pre-planned. They didn't cancel that to come to Harrisonburg for a press conference. But we got to talk to him on Zoom. We got to hear from him, learn a few things about him. I know you watched part of it. You know, everything that I've heard from people that I've talked to about Preston Spradlin, I've been it's been remarkable how similar the reaction to people that know him and have worked with him, their reaction to him getting hired at JMU has been very similar to what people said about Bob Chesney just a few months ago when he takes the football job. I don't know if you picked up similar vibes from him, but just a lot of things about the way he operates, what he's going to do in the community, things like that. People use a lot of very similar terms discussing both guys as you get to know them.
Yeah, I think when Chesney got hired back in December, I don't think I saw a very negative tweet, post, anything about it. It seemed like everybody was just really excited about the hire. And I would say the same thing now for basketball. Everybody responding to the initial tweet saying, hey, we've got our guy, was like, this is a great hire. I'm so excited. Hopefully he can keep building on this. So and as weird as it is, and it may sound, and I think we've said it before, he is a very Jeff Bourne hire. I think he is very much a coach that you would expect Jeff Bourne to hire. And I think time and time again, he's obviously shown that he does pick the right guy most of the time. I think there's very few coaches that it didn't work out very well. And obviously for Jeff Bourne, I don't think he was really looking forward to hiring another basketball coach, but I think it's one that will benefit the program very well, even after Jeff Bourne obviously retires at the end of this year.
Yeah, I think he had to start thinking about basketball coaching search when it became clear they were going to win 25 plus games. They were going to, you know, get close to 30 wins. They end up with 32. It was getting clear that they were going to, you know, have a good shot to go to the NCAA tournament. And, you know, the rumors start happening about Byington, potentially West Virginia, other places, you know, late in the season. I think, you know, by February, he's definitely leaning towards the fact that he's probably going to have to look for a coach, even though he didn't really want to. Maybe going into the season, he was hoping, hey, maybe I can keep him for a couple more years, or JMU will keep him for a couple more years, you know, while his son's in high school, things like that. Didn't end up working out that way. They bring in Preston Spradlin, which I think, you know, just starting off, you can talk about on paper what a good hire this is. You know, you got a guy who took some time to turn around Morehead State, which is a program that's really like in the middle of nowhere, kind of, you know, in, you know, not the greatest part of Kentucky. You know, it's not in a major city, and it's not even, you know, it's a college town, but I would say it's not like a Harrisonburg or a Charlottesville or a Blacksville type college town. It's kind of a rural place. You know, not anywhere near the resources that JMU has, and he's gone two NCAA tournaments and an NIT in the last 4 years. He's been winning at least 22 games every year since he's gotten established there. And this is the kind of guy JMU was hiring away from places. When you can go back two hires ago, I always hate to do this because I really like Lou Rowe as a person, and I think he's got, you know, some good qualities as a basketball coach, but he was not ready to be a head coach at a place like JMU when he got that job. His resume was that he'd been assistants at not particularly great mid-major programs. He came from Bowling Green as an assistant to take the JMU head coaching job. That was 8 years ago. We're now to a point where JMU is hiring really good head coaches away from winning programs. That in itself is just pretty remarkable, that that's where JMU has gotten to the program to, and the facilities and the upgrades and the moving into a new arena all helps. But I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into getting to that point.
Yeah, and I think the biggest, for me, what really pointed out that this was going to be a good hire was someone like Xavier Brown exiting the portal pretty quickly after Spradlin was hired and deciding, he's like, you know what, my heart's at JMU, I'm coming back. To get a player like that out of the portal so quickly after you hire a new head coach, I think that really just points to the potential that he sees in this new head coach and what he thinks that, speaking of Brown, what he thinks this program can continue to do next year and build off of, obviously, what has been arguably its best year in decades.
Yeah, and, you know, it makes sense for him to kind of think that way. I mean, he it's a style with Spradlin where his guards have kind of excelled in the similar positions. Mark Freeman, who happens to be in the transfer portal, we'll see what happens there, was, you know, Ohio Valley Conference. He was, you know, an all-conference type player. He was a preseason player of the year. Ends up getting hurt and missing all of last year or this past season, which is what allows him to be in the portal. And you know, we'll see if that's something that comes to fruition at JMU. But, you know, he's a guy who plays a similar game to Xavier Brown and was able to excel. Other guards have played really well, but he's also developed big men. So, I mean, we'll see what ends up happening. You know, Johnny Broom at Auburn is a guy who started at Morehead State and was a conference player of the year player there. So he can adapt to his personnel, but I think if he can kind of if Xavier's not the first one, or if he's not the last one, if he can maybe bring back some of these other guys, I think the personnel that's potentially there for JMU coming back is something that he can really work with.
Definitely. I think it's going to be an interesting one to see. I know a lot of people right after Byington announced that he was leaving, when a lot of people entered the portal, people were like taking their team photo and blocking out all of the guys who had entered the portal, and it was like three guys remaining. And I would say I would expect that maybe to change a little bit, potentially get some guys back. But I think it could also be something that, like, in Byington's first year at JMU, he hit the portal hard and he brought in guys that had experience right away. And I think that could be another benefit that we see in this first year under Spradlin.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see a good number of people coming in through the portal, and they'll get some veteran guys to fill those roles. And I almost had to kind of chuckle and laugh at the initial reactions to everybody going into the portal. Cause like, honestly, I was almost surprised it wasn't more. It wasn't like everybody, mm-hmm. like, you know, there are some guys who didn't. And, I honestly kind of wondered why, because there's no downside when your program doesn't have a coach in place. Why wouldn't you put your name in the portal and see, at least have that ability to talk to people, see what's coming up, because you don't know anything at that point. And the new coach could come in and say, you know, what I actually want to do is clean house. Like, you guys need to find a place. And now it's been 2 weeks and you haven't talked to anybody. So the freaking out over guys entering the portal before anybody has a chance to re-recruit them, I think was an overreaction at first, because obviously people are going to like put their name in and see what happens.
Yeah. And I think we saw it with football too. Like, obviously a lot did leave to go to Indiana with Cignetti, but at the same time, JMU fans are very passionate. We know this, we've seen it all the time. The players know this. And the thing with JMU fans, I think, is that they want, obviously, the athletes to love their alma mater or their school as much as they do. And a lot of times they do love the program. And they love the school and they love where they're at. But you also have to, like you said, you have to understand that at the same time, all of these athletes do need to do what's best for them. And, you know, they've devoted their life to playing this sport. And so for them, if they just blindly neglect the transfer portal and just stay with a school that doesn't have a head coach, good for them. That was their choice. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't say that's the smartest decision. Because, again, you can enter the portal and you can always come back out and most of the time probably still have a scholarship offer if you had one before, depending on the head coach. So I just think it's the smartest thing for them is to enter the portal and just, like you said, talk to other people, because you never know what could happen with a new head coach.
Yeah, and people don't, I think, remember too that players get ran off, and, you know, they don't, it's not something people admit to or, like, you know, publicize or anything, but, you know, or scholarships don't necessarily get yanked, but there are the conversations that happen where, like, well, yeah, you know what? You know, you're not going to fit my system. I don't see you getting a lot of minutes. If you want to look somewhere else, like, I don't begrudge it. And, you know, they're getting kind of nudged out the door. That happens a lot. And players don't know if that's going to happen to them when a new coach comes in. Like, you know, it's just prudent to have the options available to you. Or, you know, I see a lot of, like, tears being shed, to shift gears to women's basketball for just a second, like, it's a lot of tears being shed over, you know, Steph Odekirk, you know, hometown girl, entering a transfer portal after 4 years. She's going to grad school somewhere
for, you know, I think it's like molecular biology or something like that. Something big academically. She's been going to go to grad school somewhere else after 4 years of playing basketball at JMU. Like, the entire time has been the plan. She may or may not play basketball somewhere else, but if she even wants to talk to a coach at the school she enrolls in about playing there, she has to be in the transfer portal, or that coach can't have even say, come to my office and let's see if you want to walk on or anything like that. So that freaking out just because somebody's in the transfer portal, it's not always what people think. We saw that with the softball team mm-hmm. a few years ago after the College World Series run. You know, player transfers to North Carolina. She was already accepted to pharmacy school at North Carolina, and then she has a COVID year. You know, it wasn't necessarily the plan to like bail on JMU, but it was like, okay, now I'm in school and I, you know what, I still kind of want to play softball. So I'll give it a try. And, you know, the COVID years and transfer portal make things different than what people really see just on the surface of people entering the portal. It's not always just, I'm trying to get out of here.
What's important to remember too, like you said, is that there are people who transfer to better their chance to potentially go and play pro sports, but the number of people that go from college athletics to play pro sports is still insanely, insanely, insanely small. So like you said, a lot of these people need to look for, I mean, they're planning their future in a sense of like, okay, where am I going to go to get the best job after this? Not necessarily, you know, like Steph Odekirk. She's not thinking, oh, how can I get to the WNBA? She's thinking, how can I get my like post-grad job? And so you do need to make not only decisions about the athletic side of things if you want to go play sports somewhere else, but you do. A lot of these players, when they transfer, it's more so they're probably trying to find a school that offers a grad program that you're looking for. I think to kind of relate it back to football too, I think you saw it a lot with some of the Holy Cross players who followed Chesney. Obviously, some of them are probably following Chesney because they liked him as a coach. But a lot of those guys at Holy Cross, they don't have a graduate school. They can't stay and play a fifth year up there. So a lot of it is looking for that next step academically too.
Yeah, that's a very good point about, you know, Holy Cross. And there are schools like that that either don't have graduate programs at all, or, you know, JMU's graduate programs are somewhat limited, like mm-hmm. compared to some older, you know, kind of flagship type state schools. You know, mentioned pharmacy, some programs that JMU just doesn't have, you know, probably happens less in men's basketball and football, but it definitely still happens that people are transferring for academic reasons and, or completely other reasons that, you know, people have to keep in mind, you know, family things, those really do happen. And, you know, it's not always the case, but we don't really know what a lot of people are thinking when they enter the portal. And a lot of people are entering the portal during a coaching change thinking they still might come back. And, you know, honestly, yeah, guys like Bryson Blaine and Quincy Allen and people who didn't enter the portal, I was sort of surprised that they didn't at least like have their names out there. So definitely interested to see who Spradlin and his staff, which sounds like will include Calvin Baker returning in some capacity. I'm still trying to find out exactly what his role is going to be, but he's sticking around to I think re-recruit a lot of these guys and continue to recruit the state of Virginia and DMV really hard. So definitely think we'll find out here in the coming days and weeks who's sticking around, and I think it might end up being more than just Xavier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, about time to wrap this one up. I think quickly go over, talk a little baseball. I didn't talk much baseball at all before. And, you know, while you were gone, I was on the road. I haven't seen any baseball. I know after getting as high as like top 10, I think, RPI for a little bit, been a rougher start to Sunbelt play. Just catch us up on where baseball program is. I don't know if they're going to get any games in this weekend.
We'll see.
But, you know, what's kind of happened as they've gotten into Sunbelt play and taken a few lumps?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, what has happened? I think I was trying to stay as tuned in as possible while I was in Italy to what was going on with baseball, and they've lost some close ones. You know, they lost a one-run game to Georgia State. They hung in with Texas State a little bit at times. So they've been close, and I think that's what's really important right now to remember, is that there have been losses, but they've at least been competitive in some of these games. But at the same time, there are things that you need as a program to clean up if you want to potentially make the Sun Belt tournament at the end of the year, which has 10 teams in it. And right now they're tied for 10th in the conference. And I think a game like that you can point to is the series finale against Coastal Carolina that goes to the 13th inning. And three separate times, JMU was up two runs and all they needed were three outs, and they won the game three different times. It was in the 9th, 11th, and 13th, and they end up losing that game. And that, obviously, you could throw the word heartbreaker out there for that one. That one is about as big of a heartbreaker as you can get in the first conference play of the season. So they've been close. I think sometimes their pitching at times, especially out of the bullpen, has been a little bit shaky. And I know prior to the start of the season, Marlon Eikenberry said that the pitching rotation was going to take some time to, like, figure out and stuff. And we've seen that now with that he's moved Donovan Burke to the weekend. He's usually the Sunday starter now. Jaden Kinsler went from being a bullpen guy to being the Friday night starter. And I think you're seeing progress there, but I think overall there still needs to be consistency throughout the entire pitching staff, not just your three weekend guys.
Yeah. I guess, you know, just the bottom line is by the time the non-conference, you know, the main portion of the non-conference schedule was done, I was really kind of expecting there to be series wins early on in Sun Belt play, and they haven't gotten those series wins. We'll see if they can kind of get that turned around. Like you said, you know, it's a long baseball season. It's pretty early in conference play. They may you know, rebound, and there's not a ton of difference, like you said, between 10th and 5th or anywhere else right now. But they do kind of have to get it turned around quickly, or it's gonna be a sour into what was a promising start.
I have an article coming out about this either today, tomorrow, soon, though, before the Appalachian State series this weekend. The good news for JMU is that after this weekend series, if it gets played with the weather against Appalachian State, the Sun Belt schedule for the remainder of the year is kind of in their favor, potential-wise. They don't have to face any more of kind of the top dogs in the conference. They don't have like a Southern Miss or Louisiana on their schedule. Appalachian State is kind of that last big one. They're currently fifth in the Sun Belt. So I think if they can get a win or two, that can definitely help them throughout the rest of conference play that should potentially be a little bit more evenly matched for them.
Yeah. So we'll see what we see from JMU baseball here going forward. We'll find out plenty more about Preston Spradlin's basketball team. We'll hear and see a lot from football in the coming weeks. I guess just a couple more weeks now before spring game, and really get our first real look at Bob Chesney's team. So we'll have a couple episodes before then, and we'll do an episode from the spring game. But in the meantime, that'll do it for this episode of the Purple and Bold podcast. I'm Shane Metlin, been here again with Katie Harper, and thank you for tuning in.